The IND, dear listeners, and welcoming you to this Thursday edition of the On the Radar. And as we always do, primarily, where we give you the particular updates that have obviously taken place during the course of the last 24 hours and ultimately also during the particular course of today, the first half of this Thursday, which is just the 10th of July and ultimately still gets us into the motions as well as also the particular developments of this month. Now, as we always take a look, primarily we take a look at some of the particular economic as well as also developmental the subject matter happening in and around the country, which also includes much of the major policy or policy developmental aspects that are there to basically provide further, you know, indicators of which trajectory Namibia is headed off to. Got to get that, yeah, impactful word out there. However, before we take a look at today's particular program, do remember, dear listeners, this is technically every Thursday, every Tuesday is technically your sort of like Villager e-paper eve. Specifically, it's the day before, so that you can anticipate what to read about tomorrow. That's even if you have, even if you've missed some of the particular engagements. However, before we start off with the discussions, just so that you know what you're looking out for and what you ultimately, looking forward to the menu for today's particular engagements. We take a look at the engagement that took that is currently still taking place a little bit earlier this morning here in the capital. That specifically is as the city of Windhoek conducts its urban mobility conference, which is based upon transport systems within the city itself. We take a look at a discussion that stems through from the engagement of President Nandi Ndaitwa and the visiting Prime Minister from India, Narendra Modi, and specifically with the engagement and some of the contributions that President Nandi Ndaitwa cited in the engagement yesterday at State House. We take a look specifically at the engagement that took place later yesterday in the National Assembly, where the visiting Indian Prime Minister, Narendra Modi, addressed the National Assembly in terms of his particular contribution there. We step into the engagement of a standing committees, which was a combined engagement between the standing committees of the economy as well as the standing committee of natural resources with some of the particular executive directors, or should I rather say government officials, regarding natural resources and mining and energy. On that particular scenario, dear listeners, we'll also have a little bit of a sports update with regards to an engagement we've got with the sports trainer or sports coach that is the Namibian sport coach, Mr. Henk Mudge. Henk Botha. I just, you know, I have to remember that. Regarding the particular recent verdict on Caster Semenya in terms of the verdict based upon the physiology of the athlete, and we also get you some specific insights coming through from those particular developments. We're still waiting on some of the particular developments coming through from my colleague David, who also had to go and see what were some of the indicators coming through from the ACC's particular charging of the accused former NAMCOR executives and affiliates. That obviously took place during the course of today. We'll also get an update from him specifically in terms of what that entails. We'd quickly take a short break, dear listeners, and we start off with the program in earnest right after the break.
Want to know about Namibia's latest business and economic news? Then look no further than the Villager newspaper. The Villager is an e-paper that is published every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday for free, directly to your phone or computer. To become a subscriber, simply send a WhatsApp message with your number and email address to 081-200-4144. Be sure to save the phone number as a contact. The Villager, wherever you are.
Coming back there from the quick break right there and starting off in earnest with our discussion this morning, we take a look specifically at our first item. Now, this is as the mobility conference kicked off, the urban mobility conference kicked off in the capital, Windhoek, earlier today, specifically where various dignitaries, which includes the mayor of Windhoek as well as also the deputy minister of Works and Transport, gave their particular insights as well as also contributions in the midst of the technical and expertise that was also lined up for this particular scenario. Speaking about the envisaged planning as well as also the future in terms of transport to be applied in the Namibian context. Now, starting off with our discussions, firstly, we take a listen to the Mayor Laranja on the urban mobility component in terms of her address to the audience.
The distance between a mother and a child and their workplace in training and school is not just measured in kilometers. It is measured in missed opportunities, lost wages, and unfulfilled dreams. While we are gathered in this air-conditioned, heated hall, thousands of Namibians are standing at just the roadside, waiting for transport. That might be overloaded and my never arrived timing at the loading station. This is not merely a logistical issue. It is a reality of about 50,000 households in the western suburbs of our city. And a crisis of justice, dignity, and equality. I and my fellow council members have traveled the world and visited many of our sister cities. Windhoek remains to be one of the few remaining cities that does not have a diversified mobility system. Allow me to paint a glimpse of a picture in your minds of the realities on the grounds. According to statistics, at our disposal. In 2025, a domestic worker in Ochoa still spends approximately 10% of their disposable income on mobility, specifically taxi fares. A student in Havana still misses school because bus arrive later, or they might have missed to wake up. A trader in Katutubri still loses customers because traffic comes to a standstill. Indeed, a city that fails its pedestrians and public transport users fails its future. Namibia's population reached 3 million people in 2023. An increase from 2.1 million people in 2011, 50% of the population in urbanized. Commerce region reported a population of 494,605 inhabitants in 2023, up from 342,141 inhabitants in 2011. Windhoek, the largest urban area in the country, recorded a population of 486 people in 2023, up from 325,858 people in 2011. Thus, accounting for 98.3% of Commerce Region's population, as revealed in the census report of 2023. Windhoek alone represent about 16% of the national population, and about Windhoek is the economic and the commercial hub of Namibia. Yet that hub is struggling to circulate opportunity to all who live here. In 2014, an estimated 103,912 of Windhoek's residents live in informal settlements. This increased to an estimated 262,418 in 2025, at a growth rate of 8.2 per annum. The population doubled every 8 years. Left unchecked, in 2031, the number of people living in Windhoek informal settlements will reach 525,000, and as such, affording the city the infamous informal city label, which comes with deplorable living conditions. Clearly, rapid formalization and upgrading of informal settlements will result in a sustainable and orderly development of Windhoek and avert urbanization mismanagement challenges faced by many cities in the developing world. Population dynamics and growth are highly linked to how people move and interact. Hence, this cannot be viewed in isolation. Most of our residents in Windhoek, who are from the informal settlements, walk close to 5 kilometers daily to access basic services. And our road designs and infrastructure favor cars over people. Only a small percentage of Windhoek's roads are pedestrian friendly, even though 50% of trips are made on foot.
Now, still staying on that particular discussion subject or subject matter based upon the needs of urban mobility within a urban setting that has very restricted developments regarding that, we take a listen to Prisco Mayumbelo, who is the City of Windhoek's Business Development Officer for Transport and Urban Planning.
What makes the city to be successful? Livability varies and is driven by quite a number of factors. If you look at affordable housing, medical care, infrastructure, culture, and recreation. Education, availability of goods and services, climate, sanitation, and also the prevalence of disease and violence. I look at Mesa's Quality of Living Ranking 2024 data, and Namibia currently stands, the city of Namibia stands as number 9 in the African continent. And on the world ranking, it stands 141. What is a livable and vibrant city? It involves having a good infrastructure. We look at your buildings. We also look at the transport system that should get in place. A vibrant city also has a clean environment, economic competitiveness, and sustainable development. It should also have attractive public spaces. This includes your parks. It should be walkable, mixed-use, high-density neighborhoods, and also integrated public transport system. When we talk about integrated, we mean integrating your modes of transport. This is your walking, your public transport, and also your cycling. Mobility is essential to economic and social development. It enables people to access goods, services, and information. We know that for a person who's sitting here at an SME, for them to bring their produce to the market, they need transportation. For a person that needs to go to the hospital, if you need to visit friends and family, you need transportation. So what we are saying, mobility is an economic enabler. Mobility can also enhance the quality of life and the development of a balance. Mobility can also address congestion and pollution and traffic-related accidents. We are going to look at the mobility in Windhoek. I was hoping my presentation was supposed to be on the screen. Okay, there we go. Okay, so now we are going to look at the mobility statistics in Windhoek. These are the latest statistics for 2025. It shows your modal share, as I already mentioned, Our residents, there are those that are using private cars, there are those that are walking, there are those that are using the public bus, others are using the bicycle as a mode of transportation. The data that we have currently, about 46.2% of our residents are using taxis. This includes the sedan and also the commutes. About 26% of the population, they walk. And then we have about 21.2% who are using cars. This includes private vehicles, those who own private vehicles, including those that are taking leaks. About 2.5% of our population, they use your e-hailing services. When we talk about e-hailing services, we mean your neighbor, your neighbor, your in-drive, to mention by a few. About 2.1% of women's population are currently using the private buses. 1.7% of the population, they use public bus, which is the municipality bus. About 0.3%, they use bicycles to move around the city. We are all aware that a lot of people, they are moving from rural coming to urban areas because they are looking for better economic opportunities. What does that mean? We have experienced rapid urbanization, where a lot of people, they are in the city looking for a better life. But of course, that rapid urbanization also comes with a number of challenges. That's why we are saying that today, as the city of Metro and other local authorities, if we do not make transport as an agenda, these are some of the challenges that we are going to face. One of the challenges that we are going to face, we see on a daily basis, accessibility. When a person is coming from a village, coming to the city of Metro, they cannot afford accommodation in the city. What happens? They end up living on the outskirts of the city, meaning that accessibility in the city center can also be a challenge for them. We speak about trip duration. What do we mean by this? It means that how long do you take to travel from point A to B? Remember that the longer you sit in your car, that's economic time that is invested. So it's much people when they come to the city, we don't manage our transport system. These are some of the challenges that we are going to see. And of course, the city already mentioned the congestion. How about estimate the fatalities, your air quality, impact on employment, climate change, road safety, and of course, it can also impact the quality of life. So what we are saying as a local authority, all other local authorities who are here, we need to pay attention because people are moving to the cities whether we like it or not. It's not only an African phenomenon, it's worldwide. So we need to take mobility as a priority for them.
And finally, the Deputy Executive Director in the Ministry of Works and Transport, that being Mr. Jonah Shilongo, also weighed in terms of the national policy regarding the aspect of improved transportation systems. We have a listen to what he says.
Transport is not just about movement. It is about dignity, opportunity, and equality. Across Namibia, and particularly in Lindo, urban transport has remained the least prioritized pillar of ACT services. We speak with pride about electrification, water provision, and sanitation, but we fail to ask how do our people get from one point to another. If a mother in Havana or Jones cannot afford a taxi to the clinic, if a student in Kalutura must rise at about 4:30 a.m. to walk to his institution, being in last, Jonah or any other, or a job seeker spend half their daily wage to come, then we are failing. In this regard, urban public transport should not be a luxury. In fact, it must be a poverty reduction tool, a job enabler, and a vessel of economic participation. If we are to build a Namibia that is inclusive, resilient, and competitive, urban mobility must remain a national development priority. Ladies and gentlemen, without sustainable urban mobility, education, healthcare, and job in urban centers remain out of reach for absence. We must change that narrative. Since assuming my ministerial portfolio in March, I focused on three imperatives: governance, infrastructure development and rehabilitation, and service delivery. That is why I am a proponent of a sustainable public infrastructure funding model, with fuel levy being one of the streams. And why not incentivizing private operators for zero emission fleets? It is possible. From the Ministry of Waste and Transport, I have given clear directive to modernize NATIS with a clear vision that essential transport services can and must be accessed online, safely, affordably, and conveniently. I also directed that public transport permits must not be reserved for the elites only. It must be accessible and affordable by those who need it. Equally, public transport must be affordable by all and must be safe. Each of these actions reflects our intent to cut waste, empower local businesses, and rebuild trust in the public transport and road sectors. To the commerce leadership, let us co-govern this transformation, starting with initiatives such as this one, where we assemble the key stakeholders under one roof, getting around the same table to find urgent solutions to urban mobility. Urban mobility is not a Ministry of Waste and Transport plan. It is a national priority. This city, our capital, Windhoek, is growing faster than our roads, our systems, and our policy responses. However, let me assure you that the political will is there. We have begun urgent rehabilitation of key transport corridors, including the first phase of Windhoek, Rehoboth, Dwarkerich, and various other feet are road choked by congestion such as Monte Cristo, Peter, Nayimba, Rewe. In the same way, I have equally directed that the roads authority reduce the cost of consultants and prioritize the construction of cost-effective, high-impact feeder roads and access roads, particularly within informal settlements. Through emergency procurement, we have restored access to areas once cut off by infrastructure collapse.
And that then leads us into our second item in terms of the engagement that took place between President Nandi Ndaitwah and her counterpart, her visiting counterpart, that being the Indian Prime Minister Narendra Modi, at State House on Wednesday, with much of the Namibian cabinet also being present at the State House first round engagement. Now, this engagement reflected the high-level Namibia-India interaction regarding closer ties with each other, and this was reiterated in the introductions and engagements that were outlined. Now, we also cite, we'll take a particular lesson to what President Nandiandaitwa shared in that engagement with her counterpart.
Independence and democracy, which we will continue to cherish. Today, we are bonded by our collective desire and commitment to democratic principle of freedom, peace, stability, and the rule of law, giving rise to our ultimate vision and goals of economic development and prosperity for our citizens. This state visit therefore provides us indeed the opportunity to give impetus to that vision and the goal by strengthening trade, investment, technical cooperation, political and people-to-people relations between our two countries. Honorable Prime Minister, the frequent mutual high-level visit, engagement and structured bilateral mechanism such as our Joint Commission of Cooperation and Joint Trade Committee have enabled us to deepen our relationship across many fields. Not long ago, I was pleased to receive here the Minister of External Relations of India, who is part of the delegation today, and together we inaugurated the Center of Excellency at the Namibia University of Science and Technology, which is a symbol of our shared investment in digital transformation, a center that young people of Namibia highly appreciated. Moreover, we have together also made important strides to develop and diversify our relations, particularly in the area of ICT, human resources development, agriculture, pharmaceuticals, and defense, among others. Our excellent relations and cooperation continue to thrive and deepen through the expansion of frameworks of cooperation across a wide range of priority sectors, notably the Indian Technical and Economic Cooperation Programs and the Indian Council of Culture relationship. The 8th administration, Honorable Prime Minister, I can inform you that creative industry is one of our priority areas. Structured cooperation in defense and public administration also expanding, particularly through the Memorandum of Understanding between the Namibian Institute of Public Administration and Management and the Lala Bahadur Sharit National Academy of Administration. We are further encouraged by our shared commitment to biodiversity conservation. The successful translocation of cheetahs from Namibia to India is not just an act of ecological restoration, it's a global symbol of innovative South-South cooperation and sustainable partnership. In the health sector, we welcome India's proposal under the Pharmacy of the World Initiative to establish a pharmaceutical manufacturing facility in Namibia. This initiative would significantly enhance regional health security and align with Namibia's goal of strengthening domestic production capability in the health sector. and we are eager to finalize the outstanding memorandum of understanding in the health cooperation. Honorable Prime Minister, we are equally encouraged by India's proposal to establish a Namibia-India Entrepreneurship Development Center. We believe this center will serve as a motivation for innovation, skills development, and entrepreneurship, especially for the youth and women in our country. India remains one of Namibia's largest trading partners. As such, trade and investment cooperation remains central to our bilateral agenda. I believe that both our countries have the capacity to expand trade and investment, and we see immense potential for scaling up cooperation in the following strategic areas: green hydrogen and clean hydrogen, mining and value addition, oil and gas, infrastructure development, agriculture and food security, as well as tourism development, among others. We must therefore do more to develop and capitalize on the opportunities available to us to fully realize our trade investment portfolio potential. The Namibia-India Joint Trade Committee constitutes a valuable mechanism to this end, and we are looking forward to the holding of the fourth session later this month. This is all in line with our broader national agenda to attract meaningful foreign direct investment, further diversify our export basket, and improve terms of trade with the view of increasing economic or speeding up economic development to offer much needed.
Now, still staying on that particular engagement, the President also cited the particular value addition of the international, the bilateral relations between Namibia and India by also expanding into the following part.
Especially for our youth, reduce poverty and to provide dignified life for all our people. Honorable Prime Minister, in the area of international cooperation, present global challenges have exposed the limitation and fragility of multilateralism institutions that lack democratic principle and equitable representation to respond to the current global challenges. The need for an effective multilateralism system has never been more important to address the nature and the scale of today's global challenges of conflict, instability in the global trading system, climate change, inequality, poverty, international terrorism, and technological disruption, to mention just a few. We should collectively stand firm in our call for multilateralism to remain at the center of global affairs. It is also important for our two countries to maintain regular consultation on vital issues, such as the need for the reform of the United Nations Security Council and the other multilateralism institutions. We share same conviction of a fairer, equitable representation and democratic UN Security Council, reflecting of the current geopolitical reality, and therefore should unite in order to ensure that the desired reforms takes place sooner rather than later. The Global South must have permanent representation and a voice on the United Nations Security Council so that it reflects the global demographics and reality. Honorable Prime Minister, we welcome the adoption of the PEC for the future, the Global Digital Compact, and the Declaration on the Future Generation, of whose adoption Namibia had the privilege to facilitate together with Germany as co-facilitators. I'm very confident that the PAC will go a long way in revigorating multilateralism, accelerating the achievement of the Sustainable Development Goals, and bring the world to step closer towards ending poverty, promoting shared economic prosperity, social development, and environmental protection for all countries. Honorable Prime Minister, terrorism continues to pose a major threat to international peace and security and undermine economic and social development. And Namibia expressed his strong condemnation of the scourge of terrorism in all its forms and manifestation. We equally wish to reaffirm our unwavering support for the right to self-determination of people living under foreign occupation and colonial domination. All needs to be done in accordance to the UN Charter and the international law. Specific example is the Palestine and Western Sahara. The realization of these rights is essential for the promotion of peace, justice, and human dignity. In this context, we call for renewed international efforts to support people seeking to exercise their legitimate right to self-determination. Honorable Prime Minister, it is really my hope that during this discussion and exchange of views that we are starting now, we will be able to work together to strengthen the good relationship and cooperation in different fields and explore new ways of collaboration while leveraging on the long-standing and historical relations, growing economic opportunity offered by our two countries, the vigor and our people-to-people ties, and our unyielding commitment to development and prosperity of our two nations. Once again, Honorable Prime.
Now, still staying on the subject matter of the meeting between the two leaders, the engagement also saw a potential expansion with regards to the SACU-India preferential trade agreement scenario. Now, the SACU-PTA, the India SACU-PTA that it is known under, is still a negotiation phase specifically by the Southern African Customs Union and India, whereby so far five rounds of negotiations have taken place, and that the first round of technical discussions for this took place in Pretoria on 5 to 6 October of 2007. Now, coming through from the Indian side in terms of this bilateral engagement, the expression of satisfaction with the growth in bilateral trade between the two countries has been indicated, where the two leaders noted that the full potential on this account was still to be tapped. In this regard, both leaders called for the discussions in this India SACU PTA to be expedited. The Prime Minister Narendra Modi noted that India would also be scaling up its development cooperation efforts through capacity development programs for Namibian experts and exploring partnerships in setting up manufacturing facilities in Namibia. Modi also offered India's technology, cybersecurity, healthcare, education, women's empowerment, and child welfare scenarios and support for quick impact development projects in these areas. And that Modi also shared the experience of India in using drones for agricultural purposes, a project which could bring value to Namibia. Now, following these particular talks, the two leaders also witnessed the exchange of two memoranda of understanding in the fields of health and entrepreneurship. On top of this, it was also announced that Namibia has joined the Coalition for Disaster Resilient Infrastructure and Global Biofuels Alliance, and it is the first country, that now being Namibia, to enter into a licensing agreement to adopt UPI technology. On that note, we're quickly taking a short break, dear listeners, and we're going to come back right after this.
Lipura nengeno wapumbwa eva tele ulikoni maondu tuto ingida ashike kapeno nweku dite opoye ekukulile oshafafana nongeshe faili mehola mo iho etike kovano ile koshiwana onongeshe faa ya pumbwa kukaraya kovano okupitira mo Eagle FM otuna evito danjuka okupitira oipindi konu konda doi nawa nune udo otukwetira o special ange tashake ngeshe faa omarudi dayo loka opone ushendike nawa nokumona oijabo ili nawa Ninge pata fanona, Monica ko Eagle FM, onora etatuimwe bali heali, nola natu heali bali no heali. Ileko derewa, nora etatu natu, bali o etatu batatu, o mafelane Eagle FM, the eye.
Coming back from the quick break and ultimately being about 12 minutes out from the top of the hour of 2, we step into our next particular engagement which saw the Indian Prime Minister Narendra Modi speaking in the Parliament session yesterday. Now, this is as Modi engaged with the National Assembly after their first session had ended. This saw the Prime Minister of India share with the National Assembly and its MPs that were present the ambition of both nations to grow closer to each other. We have a listen to what he said.
Please allow me to begin with congratulating each and every one of you. People have given you the mandate to serve this great nation. In politics, as you know, that is both an honor and a great responsibility. I wish you success in fulfilling the aspirations of friends. A few months ago, you celebrated a historic moment. Namibia elected its first women president. We understand and share your pride and joy because in India we also proudly say ye Bharat ka samvidhan hai jiske karan ek gareeb adivasi parivar ki beti आज दुनिया के सबसे बड़े लोकतंत्र की राष्ट्रपति है ये संविधान की ही ताकत है जिसके कारण मुझ जैसे गरीब परिवार में जन्मे व्यक्ति को लगातार तीसरी बार प्रधानमंत्री बनने का अवसर मिला जिसके पास कुछ भी नहीं है.
Now, that particular engagement also cited some of the other aspects that the Indian Prime Minister Modi also indicated in his engagement with the National Assembly, which also focused on various components.
We are part of the global south, and our people share the same hopes and dreams. Today, I am deeply honored to receive Namibia's highest civilian award as a symbol of the friendship between our like the tough and elegant plants of Namibia, our friendship has stood the test of time. It quietly thrives in even the most dry of seasons. And just like your national Welwitschia mirabilis, it only grows stronger with age and time. On behalf of 1.4 billion people of India, I once again thank the President, the government, and the people of Namibia. Friends, India attaches great importance to its historic relation with Namibia. We not only value our ties from the past, but we are also focused on realizing the potential of our shared future. We see great value in working together on Namibia's Vision 2030 and the Harambe Prosperity Plan. And at the heart of our partnership are our people. Our 1700 Over 1,700 Namibians have benefited from scholarships and capacity building programs in India. Support the next generation of Namibian scientists, doctors, and leaders. The Center of Excellence in IT, the India being at the JADS campus of the University of Namibia and training in defense and security. Each one of them reflects our shared belief that capacity is the best currency. Speaking of currency, we are thrilled that Namibia is the first country to adopt India's UPI, Unified Payment Interface Technology. Soon, people will be able to send money faster than one can say, Tengi Unene. Soon, Ahimba, grandmother in Kunene, or a shopkeeper in Kututura will be able to go digital with just a tap faster than a spring. Our bilateral trade has crossed $800 million. But, like on the cricket field, we are just one. We will score faster and score more. We are honored to support Namibia's youth through the new entrepreneurship. It will be a place where business dreams can get mentorship, funding, and friends too. Health is another pillar of our shared priority. India's health insurance scheme, Ayushman Bharat, covers nearly 500 million people. But India, we are...
Now, just about 5 minutes out from the top of the hour, we get into our next particular engagement, which cites a recent development that has sprung up. This is as Henk Poorter, the coach of Namibian athletes, Beatrice Masilingi and Christine Mboma, spoke to Eagle FM following the South African double Olympic champion Caster Semenya's win on her appeal against the World Athletics decision at the Court of Arbitration for Sport in Lausanne, Switzerland on Thursday. Now, the court ruled that Semenya was a victim of discrimination by CAS. Now, the European Court of Human Rights ruled that her right to a fair hearing was violated by the Swiss judicial system. Semenya is legally identified as a female at birth, but has a condition known as the differences of sexual development, which means her body naturally produces higher levels of testosterone than women without this condition. Now, the Swiss were ordered to pay Semenya 80 million euros, or 1.6 million rand, for her expenses. This ruling does not overturn the World Athletics' policy on allowing her to compete without taking the testosterone-suppressing medication. However, the decisions made by the European Human Rights, or the European Commission on Human Rights, or Court on Human Rights Grand Chamber, are not open to an appeal. Semenya's case could now go back to the Swiss Federal Court in Lausanne, Switzerland. Let's have a listen to this engagement.
All right, we are now joined by athletics trainer Henk Poorter to discuss the ruling of Caster Semenya that has just come in. Mr. Henk, thank you for joining us, and please share your thoughts on
that. Thank you for having me. Yes, it's great news for us. Obviously, Caster have just won the human rights court case against World Athletics, or at that stage it was IAAF, but nowadays it's World Athletics, so she just won the court case, and that means that the new case will then definitely be on the ruling of World Athletics regarding BSD athletes, which is the next step. So this is a positive step forward, and this is what we wanted, and for us this is very good news.
Yes, and speaking of locally now, obviously this is an issue that affects a pair of our star athletes, being Mboma and Masilingi. How do you think? How do you think this helps their situation?
Yeah, obviously this helps tremendously because we've got a bad experience with the medicine that they're currently taking.
Yes.
It just pushed their testosterone so low that they're constantly tired. They're struggling to train. They're struggling to keep up with it, and they have an awful experience with it. So now the ruling on that medicine will also be relooked at, and the next step will now be the case against that.
Mm-hmm. And just to clarify for the listeners, does this mean that Semenya is now open to compete, or is there another process to be had?
She is actually open to compete, but she just have to be able to do the rules and taking the medicine, and that's what she didn't want to do. And the case is actually that it states that her human rights were affected in the whole process, and she just now went to the court, and the court now said yes, it's been affected, and that what that mean now is they need to relook at the ruling. Mm-hmm. And obviously, Caster don't want to compete anymore. She's actually doing this case for other athletes and for the future of athletics.
Most definitely. Mr. Henk, before we let you go, is there anything else you'd like to share with the listeners regarding this issue?
Yeah, obviously, I know a lot of people are asking, and they're worried, and they have a lot of questions. Why don't we take on the court cases and stuff? But the big thing for us, it's very cost effective, so it's a lot of money to be part of that. Caster have a big support, so we speak with them constantly, and we know what's going on. Although we are not effectively part of the whole case, we know the ruling will be an advantage of Christine and Beatrice as well. So we are very excited that we'll have very good news too.
Most definitely. Thank you very much for your insights.
Thank you very much. Have a nice one. Bye.
Coming back there from that particular engagement, we'll quickly take a short break, dear listeners, and we come back right after that, heading into the third, or the last third of today's program, that's specifically still continuing on with the local news segment. We'll be back right after this.
Eagle FM lets you express your constitutional rights of freedom of expression without fear of failure.
This is actually, to put it mildly, an economic scandal. fraud. So
not a fraud, it's a scandal.
Scandal.
Why do you give a tender to somebody who does not have capacity to build? Why should you do that? You know a person that doesn't have the capacity to build.
Eagle FM lets you talk.
That's why I'm always telling people in Parliament, let me not take up my Katatura manners.
Right.
Because I grew up in Katatura.
Uh-huh.
And I will not hesitate to tell you off if it is needed to do.
Be part of the debate by setting the agenda.
My response in terms of Rwanda at 6% is that we had been there before. We've had 6% growth before.
Mm.
It's not something that Namibia has not achieved in the past.
Mm.
And it's not something that Namibia will not be able to achieve in the future.
Eagle FM, the eye.
Get social with us on Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, and LinkedIn. Our handle is Eagle FM Namibia.
Eagle FM, the eye.
Now, getting into our last item for today specifically, we head into a discussion that took place a little bit earlier in this week, specifically regarding a joint consultative engagement with the Standing Committees of Economy and Industry and the Standing Committee of Natural Resources, meeting up with the executive directors and various functionaries from the public sector, specifically being that from ministries, offices and agencies, regarding the aspect in terms of understanding the productivity task force on energy in Namibia and the particular route they will take in terms of heading towards and understanding the insights on what the task force's work will be, the current challenges in Namibia's energy sector, and the strategic interventions aimed at enhancing national productivity and sustainability. Let's take a listen to what two of the chairpersons, specifically the chairperson for the Standing Committee on Economy, that being the MP and former Minister of Finance, that being Ipumbu Shimi, cited in terms of the engagement, as well as also the chairperson of the Standing Committee on Natural Resources, that being MP and Member of Parliament Toby Opindi, what they both high cited.
By Honorable Opindi, he's also here, and you will hear from him in a little while. So all these are members of those two committees, and they are looking forward to engage with you to understand how are we doing in terms of ensuring energy security and energy self-sufficiency. And the reason really why we want to engage with you is that the joint committees are aware that no country has ever industrialized without affordable power, affordable energy, and energy security. If you have load shedding all the time, you can't industrialize because the cost of doing business is going to be higher. And therefore, we wanted to understand how is Namibia doing in terms of ensuring that we secure energy, energy self-sufficiency, and we are also working towards getting affordable power. We are aware that presently Namibia imports a significant part of its power from outside, and we are concerned as the joint committees that, well, we want to congratulate especially our utility company NamPower and the government for ensuring that the lights have been on all the time, and we mustn't take that for granted. I believe the lights have been on because somebody has doing his or her work. Most of our neighbors are actually load shedding, and in Namibia we have not seen those instances of load shedding. So we want to congratulate the ministry, NamPower, and all that are, and the regulator, ECB, which is also represented here, from our neighboring countries, Zambia, South Africa, Zimbabwe, to some extent. But we are also aware that those countries are load shedding. They are selling us power, but they also don't have enough power. So it's probably not a sustainable strategy to continue to depend on those countries, on a key resource such as power. So that's why it's important to understand how are we doing in terms of ensuring that we move towards energy self-sufficiency. We are aware that as a country we have an ambition target of ensuring that by 2027, if I'm not mistaken, we are going to produce our own power at home using different sources. So the question that we want to hear from the task force is, what progress are we making on that particular goal? Are we making progress? Are the constraints? What are the constraints? How do we help you as Parliament to remove those constraints? Of course, much of the work is going to be done by the executive, but Parliament has got an oversight function to ensure that, you know, we support the executive to remove constraints to development. So we want to hear how do we help you as Parliament to ensure that those constraints are removed, so that we can achieve reliable power, reliable energy, and affordable energy. So we look forward to engage with you on this particular matter, and we hope this is not going to be the last engagement that we're going to have with you. We will call you back to hear whether we have made any progress since our discussion of today. So with that, once again, I want to welcome you, and so we look forward to
the National Assembly Parliament, who are really the iron ore of the extension of Parliament. So the Parliamentary Standing Committee on Natural Resources really has a very unique mandate within the functionaries, extension of functionaries of the National Assembly and Parliament in itself as an institution, because we are created under Article 59 of the Namibian Constitution, and then Rule 37 of the Rules of Establishment and Functions and Procedures of Parliament, Standing Committee. It was constituted on the 22nd. In fact, all the committees generally were constituted around that time, but this committee was constituted on the 22nd April 2025, consisting of 24 honorable members of Parliament, deputized by the Honorable Tuliki Ibrahims. I hope my deputy is here. I have not seen her. The committee has a constitutional mandate to exercise parliamentary supervision and oversight in respect of matters that directly or indirectly affect Namibia's natural resources. And when I say natural resources, it cuts across everything from land, marine fisheries, minerals, agriculture, energy, tourism, wildlife. Everything that cuts across Namibia's natural resources falls within the responsibility of this committee in terms of supervision and oversight in respect of matters, directly or indirectly. And we liaise and consult with various institutions, private, public, governmental, on really all those related matters. We are informed, of course, about your very sacred responsibility. And as a working group of private, public-private stakeholders established to enhance the energy sector productivity and efficiency, addressing, I believe, challenges that are within that sector. But I just wanted to say, in terms of your serious responsibility, it is particularly very important to us as a committee, because some actors within the energy, I feel, have moved at a snail's pace. I have to say that with no fear of contradiction. And then the Natural Resource Committee will demand for a people-centered ethical leadership within the energy sector. A leadership where captains are more centered, not just, they're more centered towards the need of community that President Nwema talks about, rather than profit mongers. We need to care more about people over profit as we interrogate the energy question going forward. And even as we speak, the Namibian people are hurting from high energy electricity prices, or even the lack of electricity and energy solutions. This, of course, is both because of greed and sometimes a lack of action too. And that's why we say we look, you know, to this committee to provide, to the task force to provide solutions timelessly. And in the energy sector, we really need action because for every time we do not act, we place the Namibian economy at the risk, I think, of collapse. We need to act with intent and purpose, as Honorable Shimi has just alluded, because could it be that issues of load shedding will be upon us pretty soon? Because I see stability, but I also see risks. And therefore, I think it's within, with those underlining that we look forward to, we appreciate the task force being here, we look forward to engaging, and in the best interest, of course, of our people and national interest, which is economic development, economic growth. With that, I think.
Now, coming back there from what the two chairpersons of those standing committees indicated right there, we take a listen to what some of the representatives from the governmental or public sector functionaries also indicated. We take a listen to Ben Nangombe from Ministry of Mines, as well as also to Nangulan Wanja from NIPDB. Let's have a listen to these.
Oh, I see. I was just projecting. I think you all heard me, right? Yeah. So now with the assistance of the microphone, perhaps I can just say that the National Integrated Resource Plan, which was approved in 2020, has specific outputs that have been set forth in terms of both the short, medium, and long-term generation options for the country. One interesting program that I wish to speak to perhaps is the energy compact that Namibia is developing. In January this year, in Dar es Salaam, Tanzania, the heads of state of Africa came together in Tanzania. They conceived what is now known as Mission 300 Million. Mission 300 million speaks to the need to provide connection, electricity connections, to the more than 300 million households that do not have electricity at the moment. So each of the countries that are participating in this particular mission have identified the challenges in their countries. For Namibia, we are talking about connecting not less than 400,000 households by the year 2040. And by the year 2030, we are aiming to connect 200,000 households. How is this being implemented? It is being implemented by government making resources available, availing these resources to the regional electricity distributors and to some local authorities that have got the capacity, including also the National Utility Manpower, to assist in the implementation of this. About a month ago, the ministry signed the service level agreements with the regional electricity distributors to start rolling.
We'll quickly take a short break and we come back and return to the report after that.
To all Eagle FM listeners, do you want to stand a chance to win a voucher of $500 Namibian weekly? Answer this easy question. Please tell us, what are the three colors of the USAVE logo? Please SMS your answer to 081-200-4144 and tune in every Friday between 1:45 and 2:00 to find out if you are the lucky winner. The winner will be announced every Friday live on air between 1:45 and 2:00. Participate weekly to improve your chance. We'll save and you save.
out this particular program. In order to be able to connect the 200,000 households by the year 2030, we should be connecting not less than 10,000 households per month, so or rather per year. So that would mean that we would mean towards that particular target. But the overall industry picture is presented by Menangula here. We are, of course, also talking about expanding generation capacity, bringing on board renewable sources of energy to contribute to the national energy mix, and thereby, of course, as I said, support households to get access to electricity, but more importantly, to be able to support industries that are energy intensive. And in terms of the larger generation projects that we are looking at, the Baines Power Project is on the radar, the Kudugas to Power Energy Project is on the radar, and the technical people and the utility will be able to speak to this. But I think generally what we want to say as a ministry is that we must continue talking. We had a meeting, for example, yesterday also with a delegation from the Erongo region. The chairperson of the Erongo Regional Council came to the ministry also to speak to the challenges that they face and how we can expand and collaborate in order to be able to provide, particularly when we speak about rural and peri-urban electrification. In April, shortly after I joined the ministry, I had an engagement with the regional electricity distributors in Ondangwa. We were able to visit some of the projects that were being implemented. We went as far as a locality called Elavi in the east of Oshikoto region there. And we are seeing that projects are being implemented. Of course, there are challenges that need to be overcome. But we are rolling out these projects, and we believe that in the context of the National Energy Compact that we have developed, we should be able to achieve the objective that we have set for ourselves in the context of the National Integrated Resource Plan that was approved in 2020. I think that is a general comment that I wanted to make to...
We'll also take a listen to what the NAPDB's boss, that being Nangula Wanja, also added in respect to this conversation.
Get access to Qatar for meat from the northern communal areas. The next step was about getting abattoir certified, halal certified. The abattoir in Katima and Rundu have now been halal certified. And therefore, the next step is for us to look for specific customers who will buy Namibian beef. So those are some of the outcomes of productivity task forces. So we have got another one relatively started again in 2022. It was mostly focused on TV and film, but now we have extended it to the culture and creative. We have got the electricity. That is what we are going to discuss today. And recently, we have started one that we look at as called the fatty oil industry. We have got a lot of, whether it's melon seed, marula, and many, many other Namibian oils that we think there's significant market potential, and we need to increase the productivity. And we will start one on vehicle component manufacturing in the next month or two. So those are the ones that we have, and that is just to capture. And now we will go to the electricity. That is why we are here. Just wanted to put the background. So from electricity, I think the question that all of us have, it has been the same. We are importing electricity while we say Namibia is a country that is endowed with significant energy resources. So whether it is biomass, whether it is solar, whether it is wind resources, now we are talking about gas. Yes, we of course have hydro. So if we have got all these resources, why do we have some of the highest electricity prices in the region, and why are we importing electricity? I think that is the questions we are hearing from the committee today, and that is the questions that necessitated a productivity task force, which means that definitely we can do more with those resources to be able to not only maybe meet our own needs, but also meet the needs of the region. And of course, like I said, if we are talking about industrialization, value addition, energy resilience, employment creation, general economic, electricity itself is a sector that attracts investment, but it's also a sector that enables other sectors. So it is a key one. Some of the challenges that were noted for us to lead to that, like we say, high tariffs, import dependence, local generation capacity, which is limited, the challenges of integrating renewable energy, some investment bottlenecks, regulatory environment, transmission limitation, and I'm not the technical expertise here. We have got the technical experts that will tell us about those items. But really, also one of the points that we understand and we hear from NAMPO is base load. So we need to look into base load and grid, and that's some of the challenges that our utilities are also facing in terms of meeting the need. From a process point of view, for we and maybe for the NIPDB, why we thought this is critical is because we have also met quite a number of investors that are interested in investing in Namibia energy. As I said, we have, whether it is a promotion of just the country, whether it is promotion by our embassies, people have come to know Namibia as a country where you can do energy. And it's come to a place where sometimes I'm telling our ambassadors, please, let's not promote Namibia anymore as especially renewable energy destination, because there is a few things that we need to settle before we can promote. Otherwise, we will start losing credibility if we are telling people, come and invest in renewable energy sector in Namibia, and we are not able to get those projects off the ground because we've got a few. So we say that the shortest time it can take according to that schedule to get, for example, an investment in a solar plant out, shortest is probably 2.5 years, and that is the shortest. Otherwise, it is longer than that because of various challenges from the date you go to BIPA, you want the company, to getting all the permits. So you can see some of the items that are indicated as 3 months, but of course experiences show that sometimes it can take up to 15 months for something that is expected to take 3 months. So there is a few challenges that we are facing. So then the objectives then that we had of this task force was, we have got four objectives. Number one, how do we achieve energy security? Electricity security, from our own local capacity. Because you can achieve security by import, but that is probably temporary security. So we need security from our own side. And then we were saying, how do we beneficiate our own resources that there is even better contribution to economic growth? So this sector cannot just enable, we want it to grow and contribute as a sector to the Namibian economy, which then can include export potential. And how do we achieve electrification of, let's say, 80% by about 2035? And then, of course, the last one is, how do we manage the cost of electricity to some levels? So those are the objectives for which the team, when it comes together as a public-private dialogue, is like, how, those are the four things we want to solve for. The team agreed to go into three subcommittees because it was identified that land is, access to land is one of a challenge, and I'm sure that some people that have got experience, they can tell us what challenges we face with access to land. Sometimes it's where we've got land that is, there's mining, there is an energy project, then there's something else, and therefore those conflicting land use is one thing that was identified as a challenge. The other one is really about, yes, the electrification. How do we make sure that we roll out electrification so that Namibians do not have energy poverty? And then the last one is grid limitation, which we understand is a significant challenge for us in Namibia, but also if we are to export to other countries, that will require some collaboration there. So we will not go into these details, just some of those challenges on each one of them that we have seen, But those are the areas in which we are collaborating. Some of the required practical steps is really about, yes, we know that we have got a new leadership team, and therefore, from ours with new administration, new lawmakers, is really to make sure that we get buy-in. We have had our meeting with the Minister of Industries, Mines and Energy this week, and we have brought this now to his attention and the role, and that's why, of course, we have got the ED here and that support. So that support at higher level is critical. And the driving that is needed from the political champion in the office to make sure that they are participating at the meetings and they are contributing. That is important. Of course, policy review. We do have sometimes limitation that is said it's because of the policy. And we need to look at how can we make sure that we review the policy so that we can enhance private sector participation, so that we can invest in infrastructure upgrade, and so that we can also work together with other countries that we need to export electricity to. And then we've got infrastructure investment. Specifically, I think when you discuss like with NAMPA, they will tell you, maybe just give me a couple of billions and then this will be history, because we need significant investment in the grid. But maybe sometimes the government fiscus might be limited, and therefore we might need to consider other support in terms of funding for infrastructure. And the other one is stakeholder engagement. The challenge that we have is what they call the energy, the egg and chicken situation. Do we just ramp up production of energy, even if we don't have an off-taker? Who will pay? But then others is, the moment you ramp up, then some of the sectors that you...
Now, that ultimately was the particular engagement there coming through from the local news segment in terms of the parliamentary joint standing committee engagement with the energy task force, obviously representative of governmental or public sector ministries, offices and agencies. We step into a short particular engagement or a short break before we head into sort of like a very small international news segment. We'll be back right after this.
Want to know about Namibia's latest business and economic news? Then look no further than The Villager newspaper. The Villager is an e-paper that is published every Monday, Wednesday and Friday for free, directly to your phone or computer. To become a subscriber, simply send a WhatsApp message with your number and email address to 081-200-4144. Be sure to save the phone number as a contact. The Villager, wherever you are.
Coming back from the short break, dear listeners, and stepping into our international news segment, we take a look specifically on the African continent, or not on the African continent, yes, where a discussion has unveiled specifically where the Kenyan president, William Ruto, has indicated to his police to actually shoot at looters and arsonists in the leg amidst the protests that are still ongoing. Now, Kenya's president Ruto has told the police to shoot the looters and arsonists in the leg. He's ordered officers to curb the ongoing anti-government protests that have seen some of the country's worst violence in years. Now, dozens have been killed in nationwide clashes between police and the demonstrators, and this is as weeks of protests were sparked by outrage over the death of a popular blogger in police custody. We'll take a listen to this.
Looters and arsonists in the leg. He's ordered officers to curb the ongoing anti-government protests that have seen some of the country's worst violence in years. Dozens have been killed in nationwide clashes between police and demonstrators. Weeks of protests were sparked by outrage over the death of a popular blogger who was in police custody. Tensions escalated further after a police officer was filmed fatally shooting a civilian at close range during a protest against police brutality. Ruto now says authorities should take a hard line against those he blames for the violence.
There are people who think they can sponsor violence in Kenya. They burnt properties the other day, looted supermarkets, destroyed people's properties, destroyed people's businesses. And there are leaders who are inciting these things, paying young people to go and burn people's businesses. Anyone going to set ablaze anyone's business and property, such a person should be shot in the leg, be taken to hospital, and taken to court. They should not kill him, but break the leg, so that they can go to the hospital and courts afterwards.
A stark message there. We're talking about that. I'm joined now by Nanyala Nyanola, a Kenyan author and political analyst. She is in Edinburgh, Scotland tonight. It's good to have you on the program. We just heard President Ruto there. What do you make of the government's response to these protests?
I think that it was a very ill-advised statement. I think it's very important to pay attention to the fact that it was a statement that was made in Kiswahili and not in English, which is the second official language of the country. And that is really an attempt to speak directly to Kenyans in a language that he doesn't believe that people will understand outside the immediate context and will hold him accountable for. This is a very dangerous escalation. It is a call for police brutality, which is the very thing that people have been out in the streets protesting. So
let me just pick up on the point about the language thing. So you think that the president used the language to circumvent public criticism? I mean, is he trying to hide what he's saying?
International criticism. I think it's a political choice that a lot of senior Kenyan politicians make when they want to separate themselves from international scrutiny. Keep in mind that Ruto was just in Europe earlier this week. He was in France, where he met with President Macron, and he was in the UK. And this is a very huge departure from the rhetoric that he was using when he was speaking to the leaders of these countries. So there's an element there of trying to separate himself from accountability, from this comment, from visibility for things that he's saying, from international scrutiny, if you will, for the things that he's saying. And in this particular case, this is a very significant escalation against peaceful protesters, because what he's calling for really is police brutality.
The president has warned of regime change. How much potential is there for these protests to morph into a coup? What do you think?
I think it's very difficult for a leaderless movement to get to the point where it can pose threat to an elected government. I think that's just a universal truth. This is a leaderless movement, a wave of discontent that has arisen from very specific socioeconomic and political conditions. The most significant escalating factor that we've seen, and this is a cycle of protests that really goes back to last year in the anti-finance bill protests, is first of all an intolerance for dissent, an intolerance for listening and using the established constitutional mechanisms for listening to the people, whether that is ignoring submissions that are made in parliament, ignoring submissions that are made to the legislature, and then ignoring what protests are calling for. So I think this is a leaderless movement that is arising out of a very specific moment and is not really looking for regime change, but is looking to be heard by an executive that, on the other hand, is making it clear that they have no interest in listening to what the people have to say, that has forced through unpopular fiscal measures, that has forced through unpopular political measures, that continues to use disproportionate force against peaceful protesters and against young people specifically, who were the constituency that Ruto courted when he was running for office. So he made promises to these young people that he would offer a broad-based and inclusive government. And it is that frustration and that disappointment that is leading to these cycles of calls for protests and calls for people to go out and march. And so I think that there's a deliberate effort here to mischaracterize what's happening in the country in order to justify the disproportionate use of force. Really, if there was just allowed people to protest peacefully and allowed for the constitutional mechanisms for public participation, for engaging the legislative process to run as they were designed constitutionally, you wouldn't see this particular push.
I want to let our viewers know, too, back in 2018, you published a book entitled Digital Democracy, Analog Politics, How the Internet Era is Transforming Politics in Kenya. And that brings us to the constituencies you were talking about, young people in Kenya. What role does the internet, social media, what role do they play in these protests?
I think it's been a space where people are able to speak to each other directly and are able to circumvent some of the sort of strictures that exist within traditional media, which is legacy media in Kenya is owned by political families and has shown historically bias. Censorship is very common. We saw, for example, during this last round of protests that despite constitutional and measures that prohibited this and despite the intervention of the courts, the government did impose a temporary shutdown on broadcasts because they didn't want people to broadcast what was happening in the protests. So I think what social media does is allows people to find each other and it allows people to speak to each other directly outside of these constraints that exist within the legacy media. I think it also allows for people to speak to each other creatively. And this was one of the really interesting things that emerged out of the June 25th protest from last year, was that completely unprompted and completely unorganized, these young people translated the provisions of the finance bill into multiple local languages, disseminated this on various social media platforms, and that became a form of civic engagement and a form of civic education.
Now, we take a look specifically at another particular engagement on the African continent, but this primarily based upon U.S.-Africa trade relations. Now, the particular discussion between trade over aid, key takeaways from Trump's meeting with African leaders, has been some of the particular talking points. This is as U.S. President has hosted the leaders of five West African nations at the White House. Now, while Africa hasn't been the focus of the key Trump foreign policy, we obviously have seen these particular developments take place. But however, dear listeners, it actually does bring us up to the end of our discussion today. Unfortunately, we can't play that particular report right now as the next program is stepping in. On that note, enjoy the rest of your program in our broadcast or programming in our company. We'll be back tomorrow, same time, same place, or a little bit later today on The Home Run. Stay tuned for the rest of your programming in our company.
Want to know about Namibia's latest business and economic news? Then look no further than the Villager newspaper. The Villager is an e-paper that is published every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday for free, directly to your phone or computer. To become a subscriber, simply send a WhatsApp message with your number and email address to 081-200-4144. Be sure to save the phone number as a contact. The Villager, wherever you are.
Lipura nenge no wapumbwa eva tere ulikoni maondo tuto ingida ashike kapeno nwe kutite okoye ekukurile oshafafa na nongeshe faili mehola mo iho etike kovano ile koshiwana onongeshe fa ya pumbwa kukaraya kovano okupitira mo Eagle FM otuna emitoda njuka okukwetira oipindi konu konda doi nawa nune udo otukwetira o special ange tashake ngeshe fa omarudi tayo loka opone ushendife nawa nokumona oijamo ili nawa Ninge kwa tafanona, Monica ko Eagle FM, onora itatu imwe mbali heali, nola natu heali bali no heali. Ile ko berewa, nora itatu natu, bali o itatu watatu, o mafilane Eagle FM, the eye.
No matter where you are, if you have a mobile device, you can tune into Namibia's number one talk radio station by downloading the Eagle FM app on the Google Play Store or on the Apple App Store. Download the Eagle FM app to tune into live Eagle FM programming or to listen to podcasts of previous broadcasts. Eagle FM, Namibia's number one talk radio station.
My friend, why do you seem so worried?
Ace, I'm planning an event for next weekend, eh? And I don't know how to best get people to hear about it.
Saima, don't worry about those small things. Contact Eagle FM today. Eagle FM has a dedicated team that can travel anywhere countrywide to broadcast live at any event such as a promotion, organizational launch, anniversary, wedding, funeral, political or traditional and church events, and basically any event that you wish to broadcast on a national level. Call them now and talk to Monica at 081-270-3727 or the office number 083-288-400. Eagle FM, the eye.
Eagle FM lets you express your constitutional rights of freedom of expression without fear of failure.
This is actually, to put it mildly, an economic scandal.
Fraud.
Not a fraud, it's a scandal.
Scandal.
Why do you give a tender to somebody who does not have capacity to build? Why should you do that? You know a person that does not have the capacity to build.
Eagle FM lets you talk.
That's why I'm always telling people in Parliament, let me not take up my Katatura manners.
Right.
Because I grew up in Katatura.
Uh-huh.
And I will not hesitate to tell you off if it is needed to do.
Be part of the debate by setting the agenda.
My response in terms of Rwanda at 6% is that we had been there before. We've had 6% growth before.
Mm.
It's not something that Namibia has not achieved in the past.
Mm.
And it's not something that Namibia will not be able to achieve in the future.
Eagle FM, the eye.
Great news. Imba just got even better. We have added brand new features to make your experience smoother, faster, and more powerful than ever before. Ready to unlock the full potential of Imba? Get all exclusive features for just 36 Namibian dollars a month, or save even more with our special subscription plans. 5% discount for 3 months subscription, 10% discount for 6 months subscription, and 25% discount for 12 months subscription. Choose the plan that works best for you and start enjoying everything Imba has to offer at an unbeatable price. Imba, where the world congregates. Download it and subscribe today.